two people talking to you people talking to two people talking to
you people talking to
two people talking to you people talking to two people talking to
you people
talking to two people talking to you people talking to
two people talking to
you people talking to two people talking to
you people talking to
you. Once a month.
From Hadley, Massachusetts, this is Flying Object Radio. I'm Kellen Lowe. Each month, we take conversations with poets, and we stand those conversations next to the poet's work. This is part two of a conversation between me and Luke Bloomfield, author of the chapbook The Duffel Bag, and Russian Novels, his first book of poems, which you can pre-order now. The last episode ended here.
We live in a society where if you are presented with sexual organs, you don't know what to do.
In part two, we talk about poetry, politics, and privilege, access, and audience, humor, screaming space, and how writing can interact with suffering. Luke and I are both recent-ish graduates of the UMass MFA program, and in this first conversation, we are struggling to find the words to talk about a few things. One is a culture we feel our poetry circles to keep direct political opinions and messages out of poetry, who and what these circles even are, who we mean by we, and the audiences that have ready access to our work. You can hear our struggle for vocabulary and how the meaning of the word political changes as we say it over and over again. This whole conversation was recorded last April, and hopefully it can bring a little spring to the end of your January.
The other day, I was in a car with somebody, and they had gone to a poetry reading in New York.
Mm-hmm.
This is a non-poet,
mm-hmm.
and he had just stumbled across this reading. Like, a friend of his took him to it, and I was like, oh,
what a lucky
poetry
guy.
Poetry reading in New York, like, who was it? Like,
yeah.
Maybe I would have known about this reading. You know, I get Facebook invites to poetry readings in New York all the time.
Yeah.
I don't live in New York, so I don't go to any of them, but... And so I thought maybe he went to a reading of poets that I know and read.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't remember, but he remembered the name of the venue, so I looked it up. And I didn't know a single one of the readers. And then there was a description of the reading, and it was about, and it was very overtly political.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of the undertone of the reading and the reason for this reading to happen and stuff. And I realized that, like, yes, I was, like, reminded how many, many people write poetry for such
yeah.
different reasons than why I write poetry. I write poetry because, you know, it's an act of language, and it's an opportunity to do interesting things with meaning and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All of those things that bring us to, say, the UMass MFA program.
Yes, and this whole area.
In this whole area. But...
Not Smith.
Lots and lots... Right, not Smith. But lots and lots of people use poetry for these other reasons, you know, to express something political, for instance. And I guess I've actively tried to avoid that. And sometimes, despite my efforts, I will find myself slipping into something that, you know, when I'm finished writing, looks kind of political.
Yeah.
At which point I try to erase it.
Let's back up a second, because this is something I've been thinking about too. So if I don't say, okay, this actually came up in my class this week. If I have a message, I would write in prose. If I don't have a message, I'll write in poetry. And someone said, well, I don't think that anything isn't political. And so what I realized is that we were switching hats.
Right.
And she was talking as a reader. So, like, of course, everything I write is political if you look at the politics within it. But I was very adamant to me that if I have a message, I will write the message. And poetry isn't the vessel for messages.
Right.
But people use poetry as a vessel for messages. And I wonder if it is because of my privilege that I don't use poetry. Because I don't need to get out a message as much as I need to get out an experience. And I wonder if that's a privilege.
I think you're right.
And
I think I agree with you that when like your life is not tenuous, like your livelihood is not tenuous when you are comfortable. You are able to focus more on like unimportant things that happen to you throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
and get to think about them. Like, that's why like shows like Girls exist.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that's all of us, you know, middle upper class, with middle upper to upper class backgrounds.
Yeah.
When we sit down to write poetry, it's like, maybe we're just like, poor.
Well, and like, I have the...
And we have like, oh, well, this happened in my day. And,
yeah.
And so I guess, you know,
I think
of myself as like creative, so I'm just gonna write about it now. Maybe that's true.
And I want...
But we can't do anything else otherwise. I mean, I don't know who we is in this sense, but you know who I'm talking about.
And we go to UMass.
Yeah. Or went to UMass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, went. And this poem that I'm working on now, a goal of it is to make explicit my whiteness and to make that useful.
Interesting.
Without, like, because if we're going to a UMass audience or anyone I'm sending my book to,
right,
they're not going to value a message or, like, an overt message. But maybe they'd value it if I turned the message into a situation they had to embody without knowing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a lot of these audiences that we engage or we are a part of, whenever something gets vaguely political, I mean, we're using this word political in such a loose way.
Yeah.
But if there seems to be a political message, we all just get instantly turned off. We're like, we didn't come here.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
For this. That's not why we came. We came here because we want to.
Listen to art.
Exactly. Art, right? Unpoliticized art.
Pirate retaliation?
Whoa. That one I definitely have never read before.
I
wrote it a very long time ago.
When?
Probably 4 years ago.
Wow, so while you were here?
Yeah. Alright. Pirate retaliation. The man removed his penis and a small part of him died. The woman, upon seeing a small part of the man die, allowed a small part of herself die too. The man said, "We are both partially dead, but mostly we are alive. Let us rejoice." "Yes," the woman concurred. "From numerous positions, we are mostly alive." The man removed the watermelon from a fishing net and lobbed it over the railing. The woman removed herself from her dress and lobbed herself over the railing. She and the watermelon bobbed in the Indian Ocean like empty plastic containers. The man touched the place through the pocket of his cargo shorts where his penis once was. The woman held the watermelon between her breasts and made cooing sounds. It was a vacation like any other, over-anticipated, poorly executed, held in suspense by the phrase pirate retaliation. The whole idea of only... This is one of the reasons why I hate conceptual poetry, because only other poets will read it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some, you know, academics. But very, very small audience can in any way access conceptual poetry. If you're writing overtly political poems, then non-poets... There's a huge audience of non-poets who will be attracted to that, who will read that. I don't want to write overtly political poems. So I'm looking for ways to write poems that are accessible to, that are not overtly political and are accessible to non-poets. And I guess the only other option I can think of is through humor. Okay. My book presents a series of intersecting inquiries into the discontinuity between generative and resultative writing from a transhistorical perspective that endeavors to reclaim human dignity through idiosyncratic models submitted to phenomenological interrogations, hinging on an apparatus of digressive analysis, taxonomical assemblages, solipsism, pluralism, onerism, nihilism, onanism, agapism, constructivism, monotheism, polytheism, transcendentalism, consequentialist anti-reactionaryism, and reflexive, free-ranging meta-pragmatism with a tendency toward reductionist appropriations of critical rhetoric framed by the institutionalized dialectic of an open-source digital society on a platform of aesthetic hypertextuality under the hypostatized arc of a Western-centric cultural discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for me, like, the humor that I find funny is not very... It's not... I don't think it's very...
Universal. I disagree.
That I'm not necessarily drawn to is, like, really easy humor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I like being able to find new ways. I'm just trying out humor.
Yeah.
You know, different kinds of humor. And seeing if it's actually funny or if, like, this is just me just, like, making myself laugh.
I think...
If I'm just, like, you know...
Yeah.
Shouting into a dark room.
A lot of these poems in Russian novels are working with humor in a Pixar way, which is, I guess, one of the highest compliments I could give humor, because Pixar humor isn't simple.
You mean like the Disney animation studio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, Monsters, Inc. is funny. It's funny, and I didn't, like, they aren't working for it, but it's funny without, oh, okay. Often I feel, I use humor a lot, and often I feel like I have to use, you know, coming from my position, which is a petite white woman who looks kind of like a powder puff. And so I rely on a lot of poop and body humor,
okay,
like poop and sex humor.
Yeah.
And Pixar can't do that.
No, they can't.
And you aren't doing that. You're not relying on man humor. You're not relying on body humor. You're not relying on drug humor, which is the one I hate the most, or party humor.
Right.
You're relying on Pixar humor.
Well, like, yeah. I think of it as, like grandpa humor.
Yeah. That's it. PG humor.
It's PG humor.
With non-PG topics.
I guess that's... Yeah. It's... Well, now I know. This interview has been very instructive to me in terms of, like, how I'm going to go ahead and think about my poetry.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I'm so glad I got to read
your makes
book.
Me terrified.
I really like it.
I switched the moon with ham. I wake up with the ham shining through the window on my face. Window panes cast intersecting shadows on my astronaut sheets. The steady plip of the bath tap undulates in my upside ear, and a cat mewls. A vague desire for the ham's mystical properties fills me with pride and angst I mistakenly attribute to the turmoil existence defines for me. I was born on a full ham. Mother called me her little ham child. When the ham turns the oceans mad, I feel my head open. A kind of phalanx of moth escape my brain and be sucked up through the shaft of hamlight. It is part of me that is pulled toward the ham. It is not pleasant to think of moths on ham. It is like maggots clinging to a malodorous slab of dream meat. But that is where these moths come from and where they must return to. The only equivalent I could do would be, like, you know, if you could just, like, scream.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you can't do that anywhere. Because it's going to really disrupt.
That's why I
be really disruptive.
It's a Belcher town. I'm very loud at night. Or I have a lot of tantrums. And you can scream and stomp. And just, I think I do it to keep myself awake because
uh-huh.
I'm so tired.
Right.
Or that's what it was when I was a kid anyway.
Yeah.
But it's too lonely out there. We're moving back and I'm going to have to be quiet again.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go to my house and scream if you want.
Well, when I first moved back to the States from China and I was feeling pretty pretty sad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very, like, simple way of explaining how, like, the darkness I was in. I did take up the practice for a little while of, like, screaming into a pillow. I'll admit that.
Did it work?
It felt really, really good.
Good.
I'm pretty, like, I typically find myself pretty bottled up.
Uh-huh. You need to have some tantrums.
I don't have tantrums. I don't know. Totally psychoanalytical afternoon. This is great. You've gone from, like, my poetry therapist to just, like, my general psychoanalyst. But, yeah, screaming into a pillow is actually amazing. Maybe that's what I do in my poems.
I feel like your poems are the pillow.
Right. The poems are the pillow. Or the duffel bag.
Yeah. Ha!
Right.
And you can find pillows next to stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Next to melons.
They're definitely not the inner sanctum of free speech, though.
No.
That's something different.
No.
Poetry should not be used for that. You should not feel like... I don't feel like one should be...
People
should feel like they can say
that.
Anything they want in a poem.
Yeah.
I hate when people think that they can say whatever they want in a poem because it's a poem. So maybe in that case, it's not a pillow at all. You can't just, like, scream into a poem. You have to... I mean, everything is very carefully constructed.
But the pillow catches it and makes sure that what you say didn't get out the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And your poem's not letting...
Filters it, I guess.
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes I feel like a lot of the poems that I write, it's not about what I did write, it's about what I didn't write, you know, or what I cut out, you know.
And that's where the design
was. I think,
was.
Like, automatic writing is stupid, and what if people do that, that's fine as, like, a generative exercise, but as, like, a final product, it's the dumbest thing ever, and I think I hate automatic writing as, like...
What is automatic writing?
Where you just, like, you know, is the...
Like a free write?
Yeah, like, you know,
like,
the surrealists were big
brilliant.
The surrealists were big into that, where you just, like, you just sit down and you just let your hand move across the page without stopping, and then you're done, you're like, you know, the... Like, this is an example of, like, organic process or...
Oh, sure.
And, yeah. You know, and that is valuable in and of itself. Like, that is the end product. And maybe at the very most it could be instrumental toward creating a poem later on if you go back and, like, you mm-hmm. pick out certain, like, themes in, but I like you can't just, like, take a shit and call it poetry. You know, and that's what automatic writing is to me.
I know.
You know, if you're gonna, like, you know, if you're gonna, like, present your shit to the world, it's got to be, like, nicely sculpted. 2/3. 1. Try as you might to resist, you take a picture of the panini eating people. I buy sandwiches in plastic clamshells at the airport kiosk. How can you tell a panini from a regular sandwich on baguette bread at a great distance? In the dark, I whisper if I lost my legs in a plane crash and got metal legs, I could wear shorts in the winter and not feel anything. You whisper you would be dead in a plane crash and turn toward the window and pretend to sleep, but I know you're thinking about a great Atlantic nothingness. 2. You are handling pineapples. I am comparing bundles of lettuce. There's an overbearing sense of crowdedness, and I'm drawn closer to you by the business of strangers. You look at me and flutter your tongue. This is the secret way you communicate with me, of which I've never understood the meaning. We perambulate by the lobster tank. At the Halloween party, we were surf and turf. I say, I will not be threatened by house moves, house moms, as I spear a cube of jack cheese. You mouth the words, not now, but it looks like hot cow. I give an earnest thumbs up to express my full commitment to the idea. Later, in the shower, you ask me if 2/3 is enough. I massage your shoulders and say, baby, 2/3 is perfect. It's funny because, like, probably earlier in, like, my poetry writing life, like, my main agenda was to, like, I want to cause some pain.
Yeah.
You know, I want someone
I want to be edgy.
Yeah, I want to introduce some new kinds of suffering. But I'm not there anymore.
No.
Maybe I'm just, like, I'm already at, like, you know, I'm almost 29 and I'm already washed up, and all I want to do is just, like, write a bunch of, like fucking Billy Collins poems. Shit.
We should do that all summer.
I think I've been doing that. I don't even realize it. I should edit that part as well. I don't want anybody to be thinking of Billy Collins when I'm when they're reading my book.
I'll edit that part.
Not for Billy Collins fans. If you have Billy Collins in your on your bookshelf, don't have my book on your bookshelf. Vice versa.
Why are you being so hateful?
I'm not being hateful. I'm being a little hateful.
You're being a little hateful, but because non-poets read Billy Collins, and he's not making.
I know. I think everything I said, I'm talking about. Like I was talking about Billy Collins' poetics.
There's a thing. I think actually, yeah.
I think actually, I was.
I don't think we Pixar should edit humor. This out. Yeah, it's Pixar humor. But wait. I think that both you and I are responding to a culture that we live in here, and especially what I gather in New York, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, where, and this is a simplification of this for sure, but that a writer should be suffering. And if the writer is not suffering enough, the writer inflicts suffering via drugs and alcohol, via bad relationships, via, you know, things like that, which shows me, and I see that happening here, and I see people making those choices, and the difference is, like, I fucking suffer all the time. I don't need that. And I feel like when I started this program, there was a moment in the bathroom. I think they're always in the bathroom. There was a moment in the bathroom where I saw a purse. And I was like, oh my God, I can rob this purse. If I rob this purse, I will have done something. I will be bad. I will have developed myself to a point where I can actually write something complicated because I will become a complex person.
Right.
And then I didn't decide what to do. But I opened the bag, and someone had already robbed it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and all that was left was a tampon. So whoever robbed it...
was not on their period.
Was not on their period and was like, well, this could be useful.
Right.
I'm going to leave it here. And then there was a point in my life where I, like, switched into being old. And I don't need to create suffering because I am.
Right. That's similar to how I feel. That I'd rather be the one to suffer and not the one to make other people suffer. That's a very, like, prosaic, like, reduction of everything.
Uh-huh.
Of, like, just basic, like, you know, moral philosophy, you know? Like, but I do want, like, my, like, sum total to be in the plus.
Yeah.
Category.
Yeah.
Right. I think you can actually, it's measurable. Like your output, it's in hedons. The units of measurements are called hedons. Believe it or not, dollars and hedons. Like if you mix,
what does that have to do with hedonism?
I think it's just like the same derivative.
Same stuff. Anyway, hedons are units of measurement of output.
The units of measurements are dollars and hedons. If you cause good, you can measure that good in hedons. If you cause pain or suffering, you measure that in dollars.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned that as an undergrad.
Where's that coming from?
Like some philosophy class I took that I forgot about until just now.
I want to make hedons.
Right, me too. Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't want my poetry to make dollars.
Yeah.
But maybe I want people to be thinking about that.
Yeah. Maybe spending their dollars on your hedon.
Yeah. Yeah, I want people to... I don't want people to do anything, really. I don't. I think that's... like, I mean, I do want them to do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, like, make people do anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Two people talking to you, people talking to two people talking to...
Before the interview, Luke shared his book with me through Google Docs, and on the recording, he's reading from his phone. Luke, so excited for this book to be an object in the world. Thanks to you all so much for tuning in, and thanks to Luke and to Mike Young for this song. If you want to keep talking, email foradio@flying-object.org. And if you want to pre-order Russian novels, visit Factory Hollow online. Flying Object is an art and publishing organization with a mission to provide opportunities for writers, artists, musicians, and publishers. It's the home of Factory Hollow Press and Not Nostrums. Until next time, here's to you and all the people that talk with you.
Once a month.